orange daylilies almost in bloom down the street. Pigsweed and lamb's quarters available for harvest. We sit digesting as cars roar by and fresh air comes in. Everything teaches the Dharma. Just this, just here. Once again, I welcome in from the 10 directions for this second full day of Yoga Junction. Especially some of you new ones who just turned up. Yesterday, I talked about body practice. And I hope you're all becoming a little seduced with body practice. It can be like that. You have to do it. Today I would like to explore our practice. Actually, what we're doing in our meditating. The second of the three. Third one being how to be with distractions. Maybe we should skip the second and get to the third. They're very closely related. Okay. First, I would like to tell a story. It's one of Sunim's stories. Most of my stories are Sunim stories. I can't really claim very much original for myself. I think that's the way it is with us all, if we look at it. Of course, we've all got our own special taste. So this is a story that some of you might have heard a couple of years ago at Summer Yongmen Junction. And I happen to be reminded of it because Monyong did the transcribing of it for the project of bringing some of Sunim's talks and his writing together, eventually for a book. So it takes place some time ago where a monastery that had been flourishing was faced with the death of their teacher, the headmaster. And after a period of mourning and special services and that brought a lot to the monastery because everyone came to pay their respects, things fell into a little chaos. Not sure what direction to go without the master. And so, some of the senior monks got together and they knew it was their duty to nominate some monks to be considered to take over the master's position. So they got a couple. They were considering a third, the head cook, who had been the head cook for 30 years, maybe 35. But it seems that during that 35 years, he had mostly just been working in the kitchen. You know how that can be. And, you know, usually it was meditation monks who were sought after to be, you know, perhaps they had cultivated the most deeply. So what to do with this cook monk. We certainly know that there's a lot of practice going on in the kitchen, and we certainly know that the kitchen master has much skill and depth, but these people on the committee, I mean, could he really be the head of our monastery? So they began to watch him, and it turns out that after evening meal and perhaps a little rest, he disappeared into the woods. And he was always back in the morning, because wake up was 3, and breakfast was around 4:30. So for the whole monastery, maybe as many as we, there was always breakfast. Well, what was he doing, gone from the monastery all that time? So because they had to really check his credentials, they had some of the younger monks who were good at this kind of thing to follow him, see what he was doing. And it turns out that in the evening when he would go out, he would go to one of the places where there was water. Often in Korea when you go around to the monasteries, there are their basins, and you can get a basin of water, or you can put a dipper in and get water when you're traveling around, pilgrimaging. And it seemed that this monk, this cook monk, would get a basin of water and fill it right up, and then he would go over the paths in the forest a couple of hours holding this basin with two hands all the way, and that sometimes the paths are roots coming. I remember myself struggling along rocks, roots. It was not like a path where you could depend on like a sidewalk at all. So it was quite a thing that these spy monks reported back that the cook monk had spent some hours going to a ground where monks' ashes were kept, and he would spend some time there in reverence. And then he would pick up that basin of water, and he would bring it back all the way, never spilling a drop. At least after the 35 years he wasn't, maybe at the beginning, spilled water all over the place. But he got to know the path, and he developed his concentration so well. So they were a little impressed, but they thought, well, we should test this guy a little more. Maybe it's just too easy to go, you know, holding this basin with water. So the senior monks gave instructions to the henjas. These are the novice monks. They said, you go and you wait in the forest by the side of the path, and you make scary noises like animals and goats as he goes along. Woo-hoo! And really come out, maybe even like a tiger. Oh, of course, the henja monks, they were happy to. So before, right after the evening meal, they went out and hid themselves along the path, quite a long path. And when the monk came by, then they began to make all these crazy sounds. Oh, he said, oh, this is really scary. And they heard him exclaim out as a kind of fever. But he kept holding the basin, and he kept going and going. And on the way back, more. Some make sounds like thunder. Try their very best to spill the water. No. He did say, oh, you could tell that he was a little bit scared. So the henjas made their report to the senior monks. They were impressed because not only was he able to carry the water well and keep his mind and his concentration steady with this water-carrying practice, but he was also human. He got scared when he heard all this crazy stuff going on around. It wasn't that nothing bothered him and he was impenetrable and like a robot. He was deeply human. So they talked about it. And they decided that the cook monk should be the head of the monastery. This guy who hardly spent a moment in the meditation wall, but through his cooking and his water carrying, he had cultivated so deeply and didn't even think much about it. So I tell you this story because I think everyday life, whatever your version of that is, and carrying the water, in this man's case, was about practice, about constant practice, especially the carrying of the water. It was like over and over again, and once again, and yet again, practice and you shine. So in the same way, whatever your practice is, for the whole rest of Yongmen Zhongzhen, I encourage you to carry it the way that monk did. He didn't just do it with one hand and with his eye or ear turned in another direction and his mind off somewhere else. He put everything for every step of the way. So with whatever practice you have, try. The word try is fall short. Do it! And keep coming back to doing it. Otherwise, how can you find out about this that you've undertaken? Eh?
Hey!
So let's talk a little bit about the actual practice, your version of water care. I think that where I learned the most, but I have only in retrospect thought about it, because at the time I just thought it was just too difficult and too much, and how can I get out of here as soon as possible. But it was more than 30 years ago at my first retreat, which was a winter Yongmen Zhongzhen, and I'm sure it was 10 days long. Actually, it felt like it was 30 days long. And during that retreat, I'm going to just look at my notes. So I put in my notes, at my first retreat, I learned a lot about constant practice. I can only articulate it after all these years have passed. Okay? So I turned up, it was winter, cold winter, snow on the ground, it was slushy and rainy snow almost every day. And my practice was Namu, N-A-M-U, Namu. I got that from Sunim one night at a Wednesday night sitting when everybody was doing fire practice, which we haven't done at a Wednesday night practice for a long time. And I didn't have anything to say. So he said, Namu! Okay, so I began to shout out Namu. I like it because in retrospect because Namu is the same as like going for refuge. Going for refuge to my Buddha nature. So when I would be sitting on my cushion, I could come up with all kinds of kind of nice versions of Namu. If you've ever heard the loon calling on lakes in summer in Canada, it just has a very beautiful sound. Have you ever heard a loon calling? And so my practice on my mat and cushion was like that. Very serene and deep, I remember. Because after 10 days, it has to be. You just have to keep doing it and get it. But the thing was that Sunim would always yank us away from that. And we would go outside and run around the block. We were allowed to put on a hat and a scarf, but just regular meditation clothes. It was really cold, and it was usually snowing, and there was ice on all the sidewalks. And we ran out the door, down the sidewalk, down another sidewalk, and up the lane, which was really covered with ice, and then along the road, and then back. And we kept doing it over and over again, running. And there were only about six of us, and Sunim, of course, was in the lead. And I kept hoping every time we'd come back to the front door, we'd go in. It didn't happen. And so then I thought, how am I going to survive? I mean, I was much younger then, so I could keep running, but my mind was just up. So I thought, well, I guess I'm here to practice Namu. And it almost always happened that as soon as I get back to Namu, we get to go in the front door. When I really got with it. And the other miserable thing we would do was that we would go out the back without our shoes on or socks on and run around in the snow. Endlessly. I mean, I just thought, this is excruciating. How could I be doing this? And it was only again, I would have to start doing Namu because that is what would save me. Namu became my lifeline for the unpredictable Yangmen Jiangjin that I had been thrown into. Our practice is like that. It's a lifeline. We have to fully embody it, and that's when it becomes a lifeline. Running around transforms. The snow transforms. And then, for the evening snack, we would get five sunflower seeds and one raisin in a small cup. What? This is ridiculous. So, Namu had to be what filled me up. I didn't have any choice. And then the last night, which I was waiting for the whole time, we sat down and I thought, tomorrow morning, 10, we'll be out of here. So at 10 p.m., Sunim said, this will stay up all night tonight. Could you get your sleeping bag or a blanket and put it around you and come down? There's a small little house on Clarendon Street. Oh, no! So I put my sleeping bag around me. I remember it had a yellow lining and a green outside. And it was all, it's got all the feathers in it, down. Put it around me. 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. So I have to practice. Otherwise, I'm going to run out. And at that time, I didn't live in Toronto. So I really couldn't run out and get home. Like some of you right now. So then I had to practice again all night under circumstances where I felt very sleepy, I felt very resentful, I felt like there was a crazy guy running this retreat, all of that. Imagine all the things that come up. And so I had to practice. And then we had a breakfast, which was sort of comparable to the five sunflower seeds in one raisin. And I thought, I just have to get to 10 a.m. And we sat. And we sat, and I assure it got past 10 a.m. And then we did some walking, and then sat again. What? We're supposed to be finishing. And it was only at about 1 o'clock that we finally finished the retreat. And I went to, maybe I got it wrong. Maybe we have a whole nother day to do. Again, Namu had to come in because it felt so challenging to me. And those were the days, and Sunam knew it, that most of us, my boyfriend and I, we didn't have a formal job, so we could have done a few more days if necessary. The rest of us were like that. We were all kind of hippies, so hanging around in our lives. Finally, we had tea, and we got excused. And the first place we went was right to the donut shop. Those were the days when there were donut shops in every corner. You know, coffee and 5 long johns. And then back to Beaverton, which is where we live, above a hardware store. So happy to get to bed and know that, you know, we were going to be getting up at 4. Those were the days when we got 4 a.m. Do you think we could sleep? No. Just lying up. It's either all the energy from Namu or all those long johns. So we got up and we went for a walk in Beaverton. Snow on the ground. Actually, it was snowing, and I remember going down the main street. It's a little town about 2 hours from Toronto. I'm going across a bridge, it's a small river, and it was very cold, so the snow squeaked. You know how that is sometimes when snow is so cold? And every squeak was Namu. Everything was Namu. There was a sense of transcendence. And it lasted for a few weeks. And then I hadn't been running around in the snow and doing all the Yangmen Junction things, and so it weakened. So my practice had been many different ways. It had been Namu, Namu, Namu when I was running around, so I was going fast with it. It had been slow and steady when I was practicing like a loon. It had been barky when I had been practicing aloud. It had taken all kinds of forms. But the circumstances, and I'm grateful for them only in retrospect, really allowed me to do it continuously. I had no choice. So I like you, with the practice that you have, to carry it like a bowl. Try not to spill the water. But it's human that you will go off here and go off there and keep coming back to it. Things are not so hard here. I know it's hard to be without your mobile device. No, this is a new experience for some of us for a while. But not so hard that we cannot take advantage of this container, which is called Yangmen Junction, with every one of its ingredients, to practice. To take your practice to a deeper level. I put my beads, so that I would try to remember this, into what I call the letter B. Because in my interviews during that retreat, what inspired me the most about them, because mostly I would just get thrown out with the bell, but sometimes Sunan would talk to me about my practice being like a beaver that swims, B is for beaver, a beaver that swims in a river or a stream, And he said, have you ever watched a beaver? My name was, what was it then? I've had a lot of names over here. It was Shiva Kami then. He said, Shiva Kami, have you ever seen a beaver swimming in the water? And I said, yeah, I have. You know, the beaver is in Canada, you know, it's on the one side of the nickel, 5 cent coin. So a lot of beavers. And a beaver swims, so if the current is very one way, the beaver just swims with it and around, and it's just like the water. It doesn't try to do some different thing because it just accords in harmonizing. I think it's the beginning of harmonizing. So I'm encouraging you with your practice to be like that beaver in every situation. Harmonize with your practice. If it's walking, you harmonize. If it's eating, you harmonize. If it's a lot of distractions coming up, harmonize. Don't push them. You can't push the water away. Don't pull them towards you. Just harmonize. It's called water practice. To do this, I like you to come up with some resolve. Your great intention for yourself, for the retreat. So that throughout you are always opening Buddha's eyes, always opening Buddha's heart. Always opening Buddha's hands. Okay?